There are hard times out there. Crazy times. Two men sat in a car. Two shots rang out. Their lives were lost. These were police officers. The best of the best or the worst of the worst, depending on who you want to speak to. Let's talk about it. I'm Jose Miranda, and this is Yo Soy Latino.
Now for the interview. I'm being joined by the head of the Latinos Officers Association in New York City, Anthony Miranda. And just so that everybody knows, Anthony is my brother, so that there's no, people think that I just made all this stuff up. Anyway, we know that several days ago, we've had two shootings of murders of two New York City police officers. We also know that these officers never knew what hit them, although they did survive for a short moment after the initial shooting. And the gunman who ran into the subway system eventually shot himself. We also know that today, according to the news media in New York City, several people have been arrested for threatening the lives of police officers. In one case, a person was arrested. They went to his home, according to the news media in New York, CNBC, that several guns, bulletproof vests, brass knuckles, etc., was found in that home. We also have today, yesterday or the day before, also, I believe it was yesterday, in Berkeley, Missouri, a shooting of a black teenager, about 18 years old, and which has started rioting there as well. And this police department has a majority of black officers. And so far, the incident will point to a clean shoot. Not that there should be anything that somebody should be killed. However, the police officer shot self-defense. The camera from the squad car will verify that. The officer did have cameras, but he did not, body cameras that they are requesting to have now, but did not turn it on. We have a scheduling of a mass wake this afternoon, which will probably show about 25,000 police officers showing up. So we have a turmoil. We have things going on. Again, I'm being joined by the head of the Latinos Officers Association, Anthony Miranda, my brother. So, Tony, what's going on? Did I sum it up almost right, or what?
Yeah, there's a great deal of what we call unrest, as you would call it, and there's a kind of untrust. And because of that, you have a deadly combination between the need to protect the citizens and police officers to do their jobs versus the demands for accountability for police misconduct. Okay. And they're not necessarily two different things, but what you have is a mixture of what is called good intentions to have police accountability mixed in with people who have less than honorable intentions.
How does that in police work? And I am a former police officer as well. You know that we're not trying to choose between black and white or green and blue. And yet it seems that when incidences happen, it seems to be just like that. What do we do to change the atmosphere?
Well, I think they one is that they have to have trust that the system will hold police officers who are guilty of misconduct accountable, and the fact of the matter is that most of the victims continue to be or appear to be people of color, and that's a challenge.
Right.
So when you have the excessive use of force, and again, we're talking about self-initiated contacts with the community is what really pushes things over the top. They're not generated from a robbery or a burglary or a call for assistance. The misconduct that we're talking about that's getting the attention is self-initiated contacts that are started by the police department, and that's creating a large amount of conflict in our communities. So I don't know that there's necessarily going to be most of the protests right now have not advocated any particular change that they're looking for. And I think now in the coming days, we're going to be pushing to have them start voicing what they want. Because just having protests to have protests do not solve a problem, does not solve anything.
Right. So what are we doing about it?
Just allowed...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, finish.
No, go ahead.
What?
I said just... go ahead, I'm listening to you.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry, Tony. Go ahead.
No, again, it just allows... Again, there are justifiable reasons for having demonstrations, and there are justifiable reasons to requesting police accountability, but there is absolutely no circumstance where you're going to justify and allow the execution and assault on police officers.
Right.
Because they represent the thin line between justice and common sense and protecting our communities on a daily basis to have a total chaos.
Well, the two things that jump out in my mindset right off the bat, there certainly is politics in this. And then there's also the fact that we are policing pretty much the changing demographics, which is minority run, generated. We are a larger population than ever before. So subsequently, we would be seeing more African Americans and more Latinos involved in altercations with the police department. So let's address the politics first, and then we'll address the training possibilities there. We know that Al Sharpton, and I'm not asking you to pinpoint him in any specific way, but Al Sharpton has come forth who is an advocate in his own right, but also a moderator on the network, which gives him a clearer interaction with people. So, and he has been directing what people might say negative things against the police department. How do we take the politics out of it? And is that something is that some information that you can confirm for us?
Well, politics, I don't think it's going to be able to be removed from the equation, because politics ultimately is what has the grand juries that can indict police officers. Politics is eventually what passes the laws and our elected officials who have direct oversight over all the police agencies has historically failed to supervise, exercise the supervision that they're legally entitled to, because they're either intimidated or they want the police to be defense. So politics will always be a part of this equation. Now, as for the rhetoric that goes on, Al Sharpton and Pat Lynch and a number of other individuals are all responsible for the rhetoric that goes out there, because it doesn't aid or calm or provide any solutions or suggestions to have solutions to the problem.
Right.
Again, so it's one thing when you're advocating and speaking out and saying we're going to rally for a cause, or rally for a result. And in these rallies, there hasn't been any push toward a result. That's what makes them dangerous, and that's why they increasingly are getting the response of people who have less than good intentions. The death of Eric Garner warranted an outcry because it was caught on video. Had it not been caught on video, you would not have seen, and we would not have seen, the protests that have gone on. And then if you link that video to the other deaths that have happened across the nation, unjustifiable shootings, the people claim they were unjustified shootings by the police officers or killing by the police, and you put that video in front of it, you're going to agitate a great population
right.
to action. And their recent response by the demonstrators to insist on demonstrating in the midst of the execution of two police officers did their cause no justice. It didn't help them gain any support. In fact, it alienated people who would otherwise would have joined for greater police accountability, would have joined their cause to have more transparency to the system. And however, they alienated a large group of people by their lack of understanding and their disrespect to the fallen officers.
Well, we know right now the pendulum clearly has switched in the country to anti-police. And we know for a fact that it works in spurts. There are times when the pendulum is swinging to the police officer's side where it appears that more people are getting arrested and there are more police-orientated shootings. And then it flips to the other side where it's just the opposite. Police are getting gunned down because of the politics that have been interjected into the process where you're told or suggested that you tone down the arrest or look away for some subjects. Is that something that you see now?
So I don't think police should have been told to stand down. I think the initial response of de Blasio and other states to allow a certain amount of demonstrations to go on was somewhat understandable under the circumstances. But when you have rioting after a person has pointed a loaded firearm at police officers, and you have a riot and a brawl against police, I think that's when you've gone too far the other way. And because of the actions that are going on right now, it's become a rallying call to nationalize law enforcement officers. It's almost to the point that every law enforcement officer across the United States feels a sense of identity to the cause. And clearly what was going on now with the attack and assault on police officers is something that says they're not saying that police department, they're targeting the uniform. And targeting that uniform, they're not targeting the uniform. They're doing that indiscriminately. Minorities, imagine it, the individual that they gunned down was going to be a preacher.
Right.
The other one was just married. These are young officers on the job, both who had exemplary, in their short period of time, were exemplary examples of good police officers, the type of law enforcement officers that we want to have in the streets. And again, you can't just paint the one brush that all police officers are evil.
Right.
And again, we've had people turn around now and say, well, all police officers are the enemies. And
right.
That kind of rhetoric is reckless. And again, when people say these things, some of these protests, even here in protests in New York, they had a demonstration where they said, what do we want? The police officers, when do we want it? Now.
Really?
And then absolutely, right through Manhattan, they were saying things like that. And then you have these Facebook threats and these social media threats. When people put those types of messages out there and you confront them about it, they say, well, I wasn't going to do anything. I really didn't mean anything by it. But when you put it out there, you put it to people who you don't know what their intentions are,
right,
their mindset, or what their mindset is,
right,
and they may truly believe that this is a call for them to take up arms.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, and it makes it a dangerous situation and a dangerous law enforcement. Again, police department and all law enforcement agencies represent that line of defense that says that we don't have lawlessness. But we don't have criminals terrorizing neighborhoods as we used to have, or gangs terrorizing neighborhoods as we used to have. So we need law enforcement. But again, I understand the community says, well, we need accountability and transparency.
Right.
So the police department should be echoing that charge. Also, yeah, you know what? We want transparency and we want accountability as well, because 99% of the police officers doing the job are doing extremely well and they're protecting our communities. So the bad officers that are out there, we want them out as well as you want them out. So let's get it done. So what are we asking for? What are the demonstrators asking for? Nobody knows that.
Right.
Maybe they should be asking for a universal special prosecutor that across the United States, and let the federal government pay for it and have that kind of oversight, specifically about police shootings and to investigate it, well, and to impanel grand juries that district attorneys can't overcharge grand juries so they can't indict police officers.
Okay, so you're saying in some instances that it's okay to indict a police officer if he or she is actually guilty of that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
There's no question in the death of God in New York City. In that particular case, where there existed a video, the actions of the police officer caused the death of Eric Garner. That's clear in the video. And it's always been our position that poor police tactics does not justify the death, the justification for killing someone else, because the police officer didn't plan properly or use poor tactics or put himself, like, you know, if you put yourself out there, we had off-duty members of the service, off-duty minority police officers who were shot by fellow police officers because right. they used poor tactics. They put themselves in front of them and they said, oh, I didn't have a choice. Right. When you put yourself in front of a loaded gun, then you don't have a choice. Then you have to take action. So that's where tactics and training and that accountability comes into play.
I might point out to you, though, and we know that you were a supervisor of police officers, that there was a supervisor on the scene, which happened to be a minority, a female sergeant. And wouldn't you say that despite the fact that this, at least to me, now as a civilian, even though this is a quality of life issue that Mr. Garner was, the initial contact was made for, that it was petty in nature and clearly a supervisor should have used her head and done 100 other things other than what took place. So shouldn't she be indicted at the same time?
Okay, there's a couple of misinformation. One is that Eric Garner was never seen selling cigarettes. Although the media keeps labeling him that he was selling the cigarettes, on this particular date, in this particular situation, he was not selling cigarettes, nor did they observe him selling cigarettes. And to complete that crime, he had to have given a cigarette and received money in exchange. And by police department's record, those officers making the observations never saw that happening, so they never had a legitimate reason for stopping him.
Okay.
That being said, Eric Garner also, in his two prior arrests for selling cigarettes, when they offered him a plea of ACD on his cases,
right.
he refused it.
Really?
He refused it because he said that the cops were targeting me now and I wasn't doing anything wrong. So I'm not accepting a plea this time. I'm going to fight these things. And then you have him making those allegations. And then after making those allegations, then you have the situation where they caused his death. So I think there has to be a broader investigation as to what knowledge the officers had prior to them approaching him and were they informed that he had already filed a complaint against them for abusing the authority. And that's this information that's out there that people don't want to talk about. Now, as far as the female African-American supervisor that was seen on much of the video,
yeah.
what people don't know is that there was an anti-crime, a plainclothes supervisor that was directly in charge of those police officers in that situation.
Okay.
And he shows up in the video, but nobody identifies him as being the supervisor. So uniform president, she got blamed for it, but she wasn't the one in charge of it. And the patrol car dictates, and that's where the rules have to change. But since uniform officers are the most visible, then there should be a change in the patrol guide and the rules and regulations of the police officers say that the uniform officer on the scene takes control and charge, because they're the ones who ultimately are going to get blamed. And that's what happened in this case.
Yeah.
She's visible. She got blamed. And the police department, since they had an African-American sergeant, female, getting blamed, they said, let that go, because that would help to calm the situation. But they didn't put the truth out there and saying that she wasn't in charge of that scene. There was another supervisor directly there who was in plain clothes who allowed that to happen.
Do you know who that supervisor is?
I don't remember the name offhand. But again, this is part of that quality of life enforcement.
Yeah.
It has to be a leveled response to that. And in this case, Garner did not resist arrest. Garner was not fighting them. Garner did not threaten to go anywhere. So he was contained the entire time, and he was talking to them. No supervisor came over and spoke directly to him. And you and I both know that in most cases, when a supervisor, sergeant, lieutenant, somebody of high authority comes over and speaks to someone, they tend to comply with the directions. Even if later on, that, you know, Garner thought he should have got arrested. But he said, listen, I'm going to take you in. We're going to do an investigation. And then if we find that you didn't do anything wrong, we'll let you go. That would have calmed the situation. But no supervisor did that.
So what happens to the supervisor that was on that plainclothes guy? What happens to him?
They gave all the responding officers immunity to testify. in the grand jury when they should have held them all accountable. They should not never have offered immunity to any of them.
Who offered that immunity? The district attorney? He offered everybody, every cop on there, including that supervisor, immunity.
Immunity to come in and testify in the grand jury. Wow. The only officer that was charged was Pantaleo, and I don't think he was the one that was responsible. He ultimately was given an order to take this individual down or arrest him, and then he did what he thought he was ordered to do. And again, as we can see from the videos, that's why I said it wasn't. Pantaleo tried to use the training that they are trained to do. He tried to use the under the arm grip to grab the person, which is how they're trained to do. But it's also was ignorant on their part, because you take a guy 5'8", 5'9", and you try to take down somebody that's at least 6'2", 6'3", 300 plus pounds, that's right. Not the appropriate hold. That's why I say poor tactics on the behalf of police officers, poor right. tactics, poor planning, should never be a justification to say that I was endangered and thus justified in taking somebody's life.
Yeah, because they were, clearly the video would show that no officer there was in danger of their life. In fact, it looked like Mr. Garner was very passive, actually, until that contact with the police. What happens now? I mean, clearly this officer was responding to a command now, and that's probably why the grand jury did a no bill, you know, like not to charge him, because clearly he was responding to a direction. Is
they
that right?
They should have indicted him. They should have indicted him and maybe the other officers, but definitely him. There was enough on the video to show that they were directly responsible for his death. He absolutely used a chokehold that is illegal in department guidelines. I don't know that it's illegal in law. And I think that's where you have the difference in the response.
Well, didn't New York City a number of years ago did away with the chokehold, didn't it? And that was with a baton.
The New York City Police Department
yeah.
did away with it in their rules and said that this is no longer a legal hold. But the law itself provides for a broad response for police officers to both defend themselves and affect the rest. So while it was a violation of department guidelines, it would not have necessarily been a violation of law.
Right.
And that's also the other reason why you may not have had an indictment, because, again, people are just not informed of the chokehold. And clearly in the picture, it shows that a chokehold was utilized and they continued to use pressure in the individual's head. This is about training. This is about the tactics that police officers are trained to do. And after Gardner's arrest, the police department didn't suspend training. They continued the same training. They have not adjusted the training for situations like this.
So who does that training? Who makes that adjustment? Do you have to belabor that more in politics, like go for months and months and then make a decision to make a change?
No. And strictly comes from the police commissioner, who makes a decision and mandates and says, I want the training adjusted, or I want to bring a different type of training. That doesn't require any political input or vote or anything else. It's a decision by the person in charge, and that's Police Commissioner Bratton.
It would seem right now that what we have is what is affectionately known as a cluster, boop, you know, and it just seems wrong, and it's just being perpetuated. Now, can the federal government come in and take over the case and charge these officers with immunity now under some other guidelines?
Well, the officers had immunity for the initial grand jury testimony. They don't have immunity going forward. And they should never be granted that type of immunity either going forward. And any type of the federal investigations that are going on, they can hold all these officers accountable. And quite often that has been the case where federal intervention has come in and undone the injustice that people have seen. So again, that's what the demonstration should be asking for. Where's the new investigation? Where's the federal government in this? Why aren't we moving forward in a timely fashion? What's the delay? That would be something to talk about in the demonstration. Not, again, demonstrations just to have them, you know, and it's not, this is not just a venting process. This is supposed to be a process that has some some results, that there's some change that's necessary. But they're not saying what changes they want. And again, that's what makes it dangerous. This ongoing process, there has to be control even when people want to demonstrate. We control when people come down to the New Year's Eve celebration. We control when people come to the Easter celebrations or all the parades in Manhattan. Then we should control how we allow this group of people, any individual protesting in the city of New York. You can't just say, oh, we're just going to let them go along because we don't want to offend them. It's time to decide. The city and the government has to be in charge, and they have to exercise that control. And failure to do so creates chaos.
Congressman Charlie Rangel, in the last hour or so, as seen on CNBC and stuff, that he feels that the demonstrators have a right to their say, but that they're choosing to do it at the wrong time. But he himself doesn't have an answer. And what he's suggesting is that the clergy come out and do something to help calm the situation now, because he doesn't see the church involved. He doesn't see any of these these Christian leaders trying to get in there and to defuse the situation. How do you feel about that?
Charles Rangel is an elected congressman, represents the state of New York, and he has a lot more power. And he hasn't directly taken the position, and that's unfortunate. The elected officials can be more forceful in their responses to these situations and the accountability of police officers. I don't know that clergy will necessarily provide the answers. They can provide some comfort to the people whose minds and souls are disturbed by the actions, but they will not be providing the stage or solutions that we're asking for. And what he's speaking to, what Charlie Rangel is speaking to, is what I've been speaking to all along, is that the demonstrators have no clear person in charge of them that are saying, we want A, B, or C. These are the things that we're asking for. So then there's an objective to it. Randomly having these demonstrations without having a clear objective is what makes it dangerous. It allows agitators to get in. When you see these interviews from people, there are people from all over the United States that are now traveling to New York City to participate in the demonstrations. You know, there are people out there talking about the wrong, and these are people that could never be racially profiled because they're not black or Hispanic. But they're going to talk about the injustice and rile people up about the injustices that are going on. And I don't think they should necessarily have that right or that insight.
Let me ask you this, because I know that right now that assaults and incidents against police officers are underreported at this point. But I would also ask you to address not just that, but how come we don't hear about shootings among Latinos by officers? Has the Latino community suddenly become like really good people?
No, there's an equal amount of shootings of other minorities other than the African Americans as has gotten the highlight. And in fact, the media feeds into the process of making it a very black and white issue, because then there's clarity for discussion, there's clarity for the discomfort. When you start mixing in other nationalities, you say, oh, Latinos are African-American. And you start, you know, we're the same. We're all the same. When we say blacks, you don't mean just African-Americans. We mean all minorities. But you're not saying all minorities, and you're not including them in the conversation.
Right.
We've had a number of news outlets that have approached us just strictly about that. We're Latinos on this issue. And it's unfortunate that they're even addressing it that way, because police misconduct impacts not only African Americans, but every minority group that's out here. And we all equally have the same voice. But at this point in time, they're not all equally getting the same voice at the same stage to present their cause. So if change, and that's why I said, if change can come about by the result of the death, if we can find something effective to do as a result of the Gardner death and the Ferguson issue, then we should take advantage of doing that. There are minority officers who suffer discrimination every day that they're working, and they fight the system from inside, and they're victims of the system from inside, but we still keep our jobs, and we still push to have the change. So they have, again, the community has allies. Not all white police officers are devils. Not all white police officers are asking that we should beat every minority we see. Every organization has those people who are warped, and the police department is no different. We have those criminals who put on uniforms, and we have to weed them out.
How do you do
that? That's why the process of, you know, you need to have police officers internally, as they have done, continue to speak out and report misconduct. And you got to have, the officers have to have confidence in the system that when they report another police officer, that they're not going to be targeted for retaliation or lose their opportunity for promotion and advancement.
Why can't we? I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's why officers don't normally report the misconduct or find it very challenging, because they're always looking to try to have some support. They look for some support outside, that if we had support, that we can report what's going on. If we had a special prosecutor, somebody that was independent, that we can report to and have some protection, then we can speak out more frequently about the misconduct and the injustices that are going on. But when officers themselves are in fear internally for the retaliation and the internal abuse, then you're not going to have the transparency that we're looking for. But that's why I said there can be some good from the demonstrations, calling for accountability, calling for outside supervision, calling for a special prosecutor. And again, not a political prosecutor, a special prosecutor, somebody who actually is given the power and authority to do proper investigations, can get access to all law enforcement material, and can have the resources and an investigative staff to do an unbiased and thorough investigation, so that when they find an officer doing wrong, they say, we have all the evidence to prosecute him and hold him accountable. And when we find that an officer did the right thing, we found all the evidence and say, this officer acted according to the law, and we're exonerating him of any wrongdoing.
Will the cameras, the body cameras, as they say, will that be a way to clear a lot of this up?
Well, body cameras are a good tool. Again, officers have the control to turn it on and off. The police department has inherently said, "Oh, we're doing body cameras," and that's a false statement. What they did was they took control so that the federal government wouldn't mandate them to have it and force them to have X amount of numbers. What they turned around and did was said, we're going to voluntarily do it, so we don't need a court mandate. And that voluntary action eliminates accountability. And okay, it's only 10 officers in the command. That's not, there are hundreds of officers in any one precinct. They gave it to 10 police officers in selected commands, and they didn't even discuss the criteria by which they placed those cameras. Are these officers who make high arrests? Are these officers who have hundreds of lawsuits against them? Are these officers who have a lot of allegations against them that you put it on? So there's no criteria by which they place those 10 cameras. And again, by voluntarily doing it, they separated themselves from federal oversight, because had the judge's decision been upheld and they mandated this to happen, then it's a permanent program and it wouldn't change based on administrations. When you have these police commissioners across the United States make these decisions individually, then the next police commissioner comes in, he can discontinue the program. He can say, you know what, I didn't find it effective, I no longer think it's necessary, and they dismantle any good programs that were put in place. But when you have a mandate, a federal mandate, then it doesn't matter who the police commissioner is, everybody's going to have it, and we're going to see these things available all over the United States.
Why can't we do this when we interview the officers from the beginning and they do psychological things? Why can't we pick up those people who are not right, not the right fit for the police department?
Well, I think some of the psychological screening that goes on for law enforcement doesn't screen for racism. And once they're hired in the police department, I don't think there's any continual basis by which they review these officers' mental capacities or conditioning on a regular basis. Unless something happens, the officers won't come up on the radar again, and they're not subject to any type of screening.
So should we be looking somewhere down the line that officers periodically, let's say every 3 years, have someone check inside their heads to see what's going on, see if the fact that they've been police officers for X amount of years has not deteriorated them in some fashion?
I mean, that would be effective. I don't know how cost-effective it would be, whether any one agency would be able to support that financially.
Okay.
But you also have the fact that many of the psychologists are all Caucasian anyway. So when you look at the New York City Police Department, for instance, when you look at the people who are doing the psychological screening, they're all white.
Yeah.
They don't have an Hispanic psychologist or an African American.
Yeah.
We have them all white, and they determine who's eligible. In fact, they're the same body that tends to eliminate more minority officers from getting through the process because they failed for psychological reasons, because they didn't draw the proper pictures, or they didn't answer the questions respectfully enough.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at that. I just know that the drawing pictures is a very critical issue.
Drawing pictures is a very critical issue in that. Whether you drew windows in your house or whether you drew the full anatomy of an individual.
Yes, you did. Yes, I'm sorry.
That can disqualify you, but having a noose or a person hanging on a noose.
It's okay.
Tattooed on their body because they did it when they were younger, that's okay. They make it through the process.
Right. So what's it going to look like down the line here? What do you see for the future, the immediate future of the police department and the NYPD or officers across the land?
I think that at some point here, the assaults, the counterproductive thing is the assaults and the assassination of police officers and the assaults on police officers. That's counterproductive to any reform. Because what it does and what it has been, what it is doing right now, it's a unifying call for law enforcement agencies across the United States right now. All police officers are identifying that with the assassination. So there's no more rationale. There's no more in between here. They called to arms and they pulled the ranks closed and they said, everybody get online right now because this is where we're at in history, that we need to be unified. We can show no separation. We can't have officers speaking out right now about the things that are wrong. We need to be unified in our approach. That's what these assassinations have done. They've eliminated, and they're closing the door on the possibility to have good police officers come forward and say the things that are wrong. So it had the opposite effect. Now, for the demonstrators in the community, they have to hold proper demonstrations. They can't hold any city hostage, and they can't cause riots in our communities and think that this is going to be okay or sometimes it's going to advance the cause. Garner's case was about, and the Ferguson case and the other cases that we're seeing, it's about accountability. Officers, you should be able to indict a police officer if you find that there's enough evidence that he's doing something wrong. Grand juries should be instructed properly. They shouldn't be overcharged. If they charge those grand juries and police officers' cases like they charge every other minority that gets arrested,
right. Then
there'll be no reason why you can't indict a police officer, because we all know everybody who goes to the grand jury gets indicted. So if they use the same process by which they indict 99% of the other public,
right,
and use the same process to police officers, you know they'll get indicted. And you let a trial and a judge and a jury decide the facts when they have that opportunity.
Right. So the grand jury is not a innocent or guilty thing. It's just saying we need more information, right?
Grand jury says we received enough information to go forward to a trial. And it was never meant to have a debate where they present. I've never seen a grand jury in a regular case of a minority going to the grand jury where they present evidence for and evidence against, you know?
Right.
I've never seen that. All of a sudden we have that happen. We got to present all the evidence. If you presented all the evidence that you received as district attorneys regularly in every case in the grand jury, you'd never get an indictment for anybody. But that's not what generally happens. And defense attorneys know that quite well because they often find these things out after discovery. And you had this evidence all along and you didn't present it to the grand jury, but you indicted my client anyway. So we know that that's historically the perspective they have. You present just enough evidence to show that there's enough to support a crime here.
Right.
And then you allow the jury process, you allow the trial process for people to present the differing evidence. We didn't have that in these grand juries of police officers. We had these grand juries of police officers. There's a presentation of information for and against,
right,
thus causing the confusion and not utilizing the grand jury in the normal fashion in which it's used.
Okay. Now, I know you have to go to the wake, and I appreciate you taking the time out. We're going to let everyone know that we're going to continue this conversation in a part two where we'll discuss the security issues, the training issues, and how we go forward, not just in New York City, but in law enforcement, because we know that both the public and the enforcement aspects of it have to change in some kind of fashion, and we have to take the politics out of it. So, Tony, thank you so much for taking the time out to hang out with me. And
thank you. I appreciate it. I'm going on your program, and I hope everybody got enough information. I look forward to doing part two and three and getting as much information as possible. This is a national issue. It goes from Florida to New York to all across the United States. It's extremely important.
All right, my brother. God bless you, man. Okay, be safe, and I'll catch up to you in a little while.
Okay, bye. God bless you.